Sure. I mean, why would she?
That's not why she wanted it, said Pine.
What do you mean?
Wanda added, her voice now laced with panic.
Wait, can she track Desiree down from just her phone number?
Yes, said Pine, who had a sick feeling that that was exactly what Mercy was going to do, and might already have done. In fact, Pine could have gotten that information faster through paying to access an internet search database than waiting for the Bureau to provide it. She wouldn't make that mistake again. There are ways on the internet to get a physical address from a phone number.
My God, then she might already be wherever Desiree is, if it's not too far away from Huntsville.
Pine was almost in a trance. Her heart soared, because as of this morning, her sister was alive. But if she was going to try to get to Desiree? Her throat was so dry she had trouble talking. She put a hand against the wall to steady herself, because her legs seemed to have lost their ability to support her. A simple question occurred to her. What did she look like?
Tall, even taller than you, and very strong looking. But she was always that way. And her beautiful hair was all gone. She had cut it so close to her scalp. Oh, it was sad. She looked like she was
in the military, said Pine, suddenly remembering something.
Yes, exactly. Now, I'd also wanted to let you know that some other people were here asking questions and...
Pine heard, but really didn't register these words. She dropped her phone on the bed and rushed from the room. She banged off the walls in the hall and didn't even bother with the elevator. She took the stairs, leaping three steps at a time. She hit the main floor, burst through the door, shoved two attendants and one guest out of the way, and sprinted through the lobby on her way to the hotel's gym.
Please, 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 Mother of God, please.
One needed a hotel key card to access the gym. Pine didn't bother to use hers. She simply kicked the door open. She looked frantically around and her hopes plummeted. The only person there was an elderly man reading an iPad on a recumbent exercise bike. He had nearly fallen off it when she forced the door open. Pine ran over to him and described Mercy to him. He shook his head.
No, ma'am. The place was empty when I got here, and nobody came in after.
He looked at the broken door.
Except for you.
Pine raced to the front desk, where she flashed her shield and asked about the room number for a guest with the first name Eloise.
We don't give out.
The clerk, a young man, began. This shield says otherwise, barked Pine. Do it. The intimidated clerk quickly checked the computer.
Yes, and Eloise, Kane. She checked in today and is staying for one night only, paid with a credit card.
Eloise. The same name she gave Wanda. It has to be her. What's her room number? She said frantically.
I can't.
Pine grabbed his arm and jerked him toward her. Tell me the fucking room number, or you're under arrest.
404.
Now give me a key to that room.
I can't do that. I need to talk to a supervisor.
Pine shouted.
I don't have time to argue. This is a life or death situation.
The man paled, grabbed a blank key, charged it, and handed it to Pine.
Do you know what kind of car she was driving?
No, we don't have valets, just self-park. And I must say, this is highly unusual.
You're damn right it is, snapped Pine as she sprinted toward the elevator.
Chapter 43 Pine ran into Blum in the lobby.
I was going to take a walk before bed. What's happened?
She said, noting her boss's excited features. She followed along as Pine quickly filled her in on Mercy's likely being at the hotel, and also about Special Agent Drew McAllister's arriving the next morning to question her.
You really think that was your sister in the gym here? I mean, what a coincidence.
The description Wanda gave me fit the woman I saw in the gym to a T. And how many 6-foot-tall Eloises are out there? They reached room 404. Pine drew a long breath and knocked on the door. Her hand was trembling. They heard nothing from inside. She knocked again. Pine leaned toward the door.
Mer,
Eloise Kane? It's... A suddenly stumped Pine thought frantically for something to say. Blum called out, It's your sister, Atlee Pine. Pine stared wide-eyed at Blum for a moment, before thanking her with a weak smile. But there was still no sound from within. Pine put the key card in the reader and swung the door open. They moved inside and Pine turned the lights on. Mercy? It's Atlee! Mercy, it's your sister, Lee! The bed was still made. They could find nothing that wasn't supposed to be in the room. A dirty towel and washcloth lay on the bathroom floor. Pine said, The front desk clerk said she checked in today and was only staying one night. I would say that she might have just gone out, but there's no suitcase or anything else of hers in here. Do you think she could have already left? But surely if she checked out, the clerk would have told you. If she came here looking for Desiree, she might have found out she's been arrested and is in jail. There would be no way for her to see her. She might have just left without bothering to check out. Pine stood in the middle of the room and put a hand over her face. Shit! I can't believe I walked right past my sister and didn't even know it was her. My God, Agent Pine, you haven't seen her in 30 years. She wouldn't recognize you either. But we're twins, Carol. Damn it, you'd think I would have... What? Felt a tingling sensation? That's not how it works, Agent Pine. It was amazing luck she was staying at the same hotel. And it was just bad luck you didn't recognize her. There was nothing you could have done. Pine went to stand over by the window and looked out. She had a sudden thought. They don't have valet service here, only self-park. But they might have a security camera. They rushed back to the front desk where the same young man was standing. He started scowling as Pine approached him. He ducked into the room behind the desk, and 30 seconds later, an older woman came out, also carrying a scowl and a defensive posture. Can I help you? She said stiffly. Pine pulled out her shield. I'm with the FBI. I need to know if you have video surveillance of the parking lot. Why do you need to know that? Because I am trying to track down a guest who is staying here. She's not in her room. She might have recently left the hotel. I need to see if her car or her image is on the film. Do you have a warrant? Why do I need a warrant? Asked Pine. I'm not asking to search anyone's room. You've apparently already done that, or so my associate told me. Video surveillance is a form of searching. It invades someone's privacy. Not only the person you say you're looking for, but our other guests as well. So, no warrant, no security tape. You sound like a lawyer, said Pine, who was impressed with the woman's argument, despite her frustration with her answer. For 20 years, I was a paralegal to one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the state. Why are you working here, then? If you must know, he died and I lost my job. And I'm apparently too old and too expensive to be employed as a paralegal anymore, she said bitterly. Blum said, Well, clearly those people are wrong and stupid. The supervisor looked at Blum. Are you with the FBI, too? I am. Now the supervisor looked impressed. Pine could almost see the woman's brain percolating. Well, that's progress. Blum smiled knowingly. Yes, it is, but a lot more progress needs to be done. I think we both know that. The woman eyed her for a long moment before she glanced at Pine. But I'm still afraid I can't do what you want without the proper legal process. Pine's features calmed, and she rested her elbows on the counter and looked at the woman, her expression one of desperation mingled with mental exhaustion. Would it make a difference if I told you the woman in question is my twin sister, and that I haven't seen her since we were 6 and she was kidnapped from our home in Georgia? The woman took a step back and gave each of them a searching glance. Is that really the case? I would never make something like that up. Using Blum's phone, because she had left hers in her room, Pine showed the woman the image of Mercy from the FBI PSA. This is my sister. At the exact moment when she broke free from years as a captive in a living hell. Now, I believe she's in this hotel. I've never been this close to her in 30 years. Pine handed the phone back to Blum and said pleadingly, Will you please help me? If I have to wait for a warrant, she'll be long gone. This may be my only shot. A significant moment passed while the woman processed all of this. Then she nodded and said, "Would you like a tour of our security room? We sometimes offer that to our guests so they can see how we take ensuring their safety seriously. I can even have my personnel show some actual footage from the parking lot from today, say around the time your sister checked in."
"Thank you," said Pine with a relieved smile. "Thank you so much."
"I'm someone's sister too," the woman said demurely. Chapter 44. 10 minutes later, Pine and Blum were sitting next to a woman in uniform in a small office near the hotel's business center. The woman was hitting keys on her computer, and footage was coming up on the screen.
"Okay, here we go."
She manipulated the footage to speed it up to whenever someone appeared in the parking lot. They saw people come and go in their cars. Then Pine said,
"Hold it right there. There."
The woman froze the footage, and Pine and Blum stared at a very tall person in a hoodie getting out of a car. The film quality was poor, black and white and grainy.
"It's hard to make out much," said Blum, "including whether it's a man or a woman."
"Can't see the face at all," Pine added in a disappointed tone. "Only the profile."
"Can you let it go frame by frame?" she asked the woman. The security officer nodded and hit some keys. They watched as the person walked slowly away from the car and toward the hotel, with a duffel in hand.
"Still can't make them out, and I couldn't see the license plate either," said Pine.
"Can you go back and enhance it?"
"Sorry, that's the best I can do," the woman said. "But the car's make and model are clear. It's a Honda Civic. Looks to be really, really old."
"Yes, it does," said Blum.
Pine said, "Thank you for doing this."
"No problem. Hope you find the person."
Pine and Blum walked out and headed toward the elevator.
"I can't believe this. She was right there, and now she's gone."
Blum said,
"Why do you think Mercy is involved in all this now?"
"She must have seen the FBI's PSA, and that's a problem."
"Why?" asked Blum.
"The way the Bureau worded it, she might think they're after her for Joe Atkins's murder."
"Shit.
I should have asked Wanda if Mercy was worried about that. But I can phone and ask her when I get back to my room. Since she called my cell, I have her number in my phone list."
Blum said,
"Can you get the Bureau to change the message? We know she didn't kill Atkins, not after Desiree confessed."
"I tried to do that before, but they wouldn't relent. You know, they try to walk a fine line at all times. I can try again after what we learned from Desiree, but I'm not going to hold my breath."
She suddenly brightened.
"When McAllister gets here tomorrow, I can ask him about it. He might be able to persuade the higher-ups to go for that.
In the meantime, you can put out an APB for a Honda Civic."
Pine said,
"I can and will. But would you like to take a guess how many of them there are? And we couldn't even tell the color."
"Well, you can put out a description of Mercy. She does stand out. And now we have an updated description of her."
"Yeah, I can do that too."
"You don't sound hopeful."
"Oh, I am hopeful, Carol, and for one very good reason."
Blum nodded.
"Now you know that your sister is alive."
Pine broke into a relieved grin.
"It's weird."
"What is?"
"I've never been this happy and miserable at the same time. And who knows? We've already had one miracle. Maybe we'll have another one, and Mercy will show back up at the hotel.
My fingers are crossed."
Blum went to her room, but Pine decided to check on Mercy's room again. She figured she might have missed something. She had been too distracted to perform a thorough search. She took a few minutes to look around, and then picked up the discarded towel and washcloth and sat on the side of the tub holding them. Would she ever again be this close to her sister? Would Mercy disappear again for another 30 years? She had been euphoric for about 2 minutes. Now she had never felt this depressed. She dropped the towel and washcloth on the floor.
"I'm sorry, Mercy. I was so stupid. I should have known that was you. I should have."
She rose and left. She turned to pull the door closed behind her. That's when she felt a gun muzzle pressed against her spine, and a voice said,
"Come with us very quietly, or you're dead right here. And if you make one move or try to get away, we will kill anyone we run into. If you don't believe me, just try it."
Pine looked back into the man's hard, cruel features and believed him. Chapter 45. A blindfolded Pine drew a long breath. She could not see the pitch darkness that surrounded her like a cage, but she could sense it. She was also bound and gagged. She didn't know how much time had passed, but for some reason she thought it was still nighttime. Even with her feet and hands bound, she had managed to sleep a little, if fitfully. She had no idea who had snatched her or why, or where she currently was. They had blindfolded her on the drive over to wherever they were. She had managed to gauge how long the trip had taken, about a half hour or so. In a mountainous area like Asheville, she could be in the middle of nowhere now. She had heard noises every now and then, but the men had not come back. She had been helped down a set of steps, so she might be in a basement or a cellar. Pine tensed when she heard footsteps above. There were the murmurings of conversation, then a raised voice was saying something she could not make out. And then came more footsteps. A door opened, and a light clicked on. With the blindfold on, the light couldn't dazzle her. But her heart started to race when the footsteps drew near. Peter Buckley and Britt Spector stopped in front of Pine, and both gazed down at Buckley's hand, which held Pine's FBI shield. Spector looked quite upset at the prospect of having a kidnapped FBI agent in their midst, but Buckley didn't seem unduly disturbed by this. He glanced over at the two men who had abducted Pine, and then turned back to her.
"What's your name?"
he asked. "FBI Special Agent Atlee Pine. Who the hell are you?" Buckley pulled up a chair and sat down across from Pine.
"I'm looking for someone named Eloise Kane. I understand that you have also been making inquiries about her. Why?"
"Answer my question first."
"To negotiate, one must have something to negotiate with. You have nothing."
Pine didn't respond to this.
"We don't seem to be getting anywhere,"
said Buckley quietly. "What's your interest in Kane?" asked Pine.
"She killed someone."
"Who?"
"None of your concern,"
said Buckley. "How do you know she killed the person?"
"There were multiple witnesses."
"Why did she do it?" asked Pine.
"Again, none of your concern,"
replied Buckley. "Was it self-defense?"
"I've answered a number of your questions. I think it's your turn."
"She's part of an investigation I'm involved in," said Pine.
"I know about the FBI's PSA. You're looking for her. Her name once was Rebecca Atkins, and she was from Georgia."
"That's right."
"I made inquiries into the matter. There was a murder. Joe Atkins, his wife, Desiree Atkins, disappeared. Is that the FBI's interest?"
"Yes."
"She wasn't their daughter. She was kidnapped by someone and brought to the Atkinses."
"You seem to know a lot," said Pine.
"I also know that back then her name was Mercy. What was her last name?"
Pine thought quickly. "We don't know that yet."
"You're lying. If she was kidnapped, she had to have a last name and the FBI would know it. What was the last name?"
"I can't tell you."
"What is the exact nature of your investigation?"
"I can't disclose that." Buckley nodded at Spector and flicked a finger at Pine. Spector stepped forward, drew a breath, and drove her fist into Pine's gut. Pine hadn't sensed something coming and wasn't prepared for the blow, but her rock-solid abs protected her somewhat. Still, the hard shot hurt like hell, and she toppled out of the chair. One of the men lifted Pine up and slammed her back into the seat, where she pitched forward, trying not to throw up. When she finally managed to sit up, Pine gasped. "You're in a world of trouble for kidnapping an FBI agent."
"I agree,"
was Buckley's surprising reply.
"Only my man mistook you for Kane. tall and strong-looking with long dark hair, was the description that I took off a copy of her driver's license. To be fair to my people, you were coming out of her hotel room. Now we must make the best of it. I have kept you blindfolded so that we might have a peaceful resolution of this matter. You tell me what I need to know, and we let you go. I have no wish to end your life unnecessarily.
I have nothing to tell you, because I don't know where Kane is. I'm looking for her just like you.
I know she booked a room at the hotel where you were staying. Have you already met with her? Where is she?
I didn't know she was at my hotel.
As I already pointed out, you were coming out of her room. My men confirmed the number from one of the hotel staff.
Okay, I did find out she was there, but only after she had left. There was no suitcase, no nothing in the room.
So why are you still in Asheville, then? Is it this Desiree Atkins, the one who disappeared?
It doesn't matter, said Pine.
Why not?
She was arrested in the last 24 hours, and she's in jail now, charged with some serious crimes.
What was she arrested for, exactly?
Asked Buckley. I choose not to tell you. On a sign from Buckley, Spectre struck Pine another blow, this time via a spin kick to the side of her head. Perhaps fortunately for her, this time the blow knocked Pine unconscious. Buckley looked at her lying there on the floor, and then turned to one of his men.
Find out about the woman who was arrested. I doubt it will be under the name Desiree Atkins. Do it now.
The man hustled up the stairs, while Spectre bent down to check on Pine. She felt for a pulse and was relieved it was strong. She brushed the hair out of Pine's face and saw the large bruise forming on the side of her face. She glanced over at Buckley. I didn't mean to hit her that hard.
It doesn't matter,
said Buckley absently. Peter, she's an FBI agent. Do you know how serious this is?
I look at it as an opportunity.
Spectre straightened. What does that mean? What opportunity?
You know of my personal history?
Some, yes.
My father was destroyed by the federal government. They even managed to make my mother betray him.
Peter, I understand that. Buckley barked.
This is my chance to make it right, Britt. This may be my only chance, and I'm going to take it.
He looked at the fallen Pine.
There lies the shining symbol of the federal government in all its inept and disgusting glory.
He looked at Spectre.
Two birds with one stone, Britt. A lifetime of injustice, rectified in one act.
As Spectre stared over at the man, she tensed. His expression, his entire demeanor, had changed drastically. It was as though he were another person entirely.
Where is all this coming from, Peter? I thought we were just after Eloise Kane. I didn't sign on to wage some symbolic war against the federal government because of what it did to your family.
He pointed his finger at her.
You signed on to do what I tell you to do. If you can't do that, you are of no use to me.
I thought you said we were going to reach a peaceful resolution on this with regard to Agent Pine.
I lied. Now, are you with me or not?
Spectre glanced at the fallen Pine. I'm with you, of course.
Thank you. Now, I have a phone call to make.
He went to a corner and punched in a number, while Spectre bent over Pine and tried to revive her. The call was answered 5 seconds later by a distinguished baritone male voice.
Mr. Buckley, is something wrong?
I need you to come to Asheville, North Carolina. I'll send the jet.
And what's in Asheville?
I have someone I want you to represent in a matter of great importance to me.
Chapter 46. 2 hours outside of Asheville, Kane pulled off the road, cut the engine, and just sat there. She rubbed her face and then rubbed it again. She felt dirty despite her shower after working out. She felt sick despite not being ill. She had come here to tear down her nemesis once and for all, only to find that her nemesis was sitting in jail. But not before she had kidnapped another girl and held her prisoner. In her anxiety, Kane pushed against the steering wheel so hard, she actually felt it start to bend. She relaxed and looked out the window. The darkness looked back at her without a trace of understanding or empathy, when in all honesty, she was looking for both. You have to put this behind you, Elle. You can't do this anymore. You won't make it. But she had another dilemma. The FBI was still looking for her. She hadn't stabbed Joe Atkins, but there was no way that Desiree would ever say that she hadn't. She would try to take Kane down with her. That was for certain. In fact, she thought with a sudden panic, she might use that as leverage to get a better deal on her current crimes. Trade Kane for a lighter sentence. Kane wouldn't put anything past the woman, because literally nothing was beyond her. So where did that leave her? Tired and clueless and just not giving a shit. With Desiree behind bars, all the energy seemed to have been sucked right out of her. That was why she had decided to just leave. But now she was rethinking that decision. Kane fingered the hotel key card in her pocket. She had blown good money on her room, and she hadn't even slept there or even checked out. She decided to go back and get a good night's sleep. In the morning, she would decide what to do. She drove back to the hotel, went up to her room, and fell into bed. At least for a few hours, her troubles would no longer rule her thoughts, but they might sneak back in the form of nightmares. As she closed her eyes, Kane simply decided to chance it. Nightmares couldn't really hurt you. It was only when you awoke from them that the real pain could come. The next morning, Carol Blum was getting worried. She had arranged to meet with Pine for an early breakfast, but Pine hadn't shown up, which was not like her. Blum had phoned both her cell and her room and gotten no answer. She had gone to Pine's room and knocked and also gotten no response. When she called Pine's phone, she could hear it ringing from inside the room. Something was definitely wrong. She rushed down to the lobby to find out if anyone had seen Pine, when two men in blue FBI windbreakers strode into the hotel looking like they owned the place. "Agent McAllister," she said, going over to the men and instinctively focusing on the older one. That man was well into his 40s, salt and pepper haired, medium height, and with a trim build and alert manner. The other was in his early 30s, tall and lanky with a jutting chin, a high, lined forehead and blonde hair. He looked at Blum with suspicion. The older man nodded.
"I'm Special Agent Drew McAllister, and you are?"
Blum quickly explained who she was, and also that Pine was apparently missing. McAllister quickly took charge and made inquiries at the front desk. One of the attendants led them up to Pine's room and opened the door for them. They quickly searched through the room and found that Pine's belongings were all there, except they couldn't find her guns. "They might be in the room safe," said Blum. "I know she usually stows them in there." She opened the closet and pointed out the safe. "It's locked."
"You're probably right," said McAllister.
"She had her shield with her when she was going back to her room last night," Blum told them.
"Well, maybe she never made it back to her room,"
said McAllister grimly.
"Is your car still in the parking lot?"
"Yes, I saw it from out my window."
"And she didn't contact you after you saw her last night?"
"No. I think you're right. I don't think she made it back to her room."
"Anything unusual happened here last night?"
asked the other agent, who had been introduced as Special Agent Neil Bertrand. Blum glanced at him for a moment, her mind spinning rapidly. She did not want to tell the FBI about Mercy Pine having been in the hotel last night. But once they made inquiries, the agents would find out about the questions Pine had been asking the previous night. "We were following up some leads, but nothing panned out," she said, deciding to judiciously tell a semblance of the truth. She had been with the FBI for far too long to outright lie to two of its agents. McAllister gave her the bureau stare down, which Blum handled with aplomb, having confronted it many times in the past.
"How long have you been with the bureau?"
he asked coolly. When she told him, he said,
"Yeah, I thought so."
He cracked a grin.
"You've got all our numbers, right?"
I just want to find Agent Pine. They went back downstairs, where McAllister and Bertrand methodically questioned the staff. They finally found one employee who was about to go off duty. He said he had seen a woman fitting Pine's description, leaving the hotel around 10 that night with two men.
Did it seem like she was being taken against her will?
Asked McAllister.
I don't know,
said the man.
But they were real close to her. One guy actually had his arm around her waist, and she didn't look very happy, now that I recall. But it's not like she was screaming or anything. Did you see if they got into a car?
Asked Bertrand.
No, I didn't go outside.
At that point, McAllister called in the local police. The employee was given over to a sketch artist to provide a description of the two men. Security footage from the previous night was checked, but there was no sign of Pine on any of it. McAllister speculated that the men might not have been parked in the lot, but perhaps right in front of the hotel.
But why would they have targeted her?
Asked McAllister after they had finished with the local cops. I don't know, said Blum. She did explain about Dolores Venuti's having been arrested and having gone to see her in the detention facility. Besides having enslaved a young girl, she apparently was running some sort of drug enterprise. These men might have been working for her as part of that. McAllister and Bertrand went to consult with the local cops about this possible lead, leaving Blum all alone in the lobby. She walked around in a bit of a daze until she passed by the front desk. The clerk, who had been on duty the previous evening, walked into the lobby and spotted her.
Ma'am?
Yes?
The guest you and your friend were looking for yesterday?
Blum instantly tensed. Yes?
She came back last night.
She did?
Yep, I recognized her. Eloise Kane. She sort of stands out. When I was driving in, I saw her out jogging. When I pulled into the parking lot, she was going into the gym through the outdoor entrance.
Thank you so much. He smiled.
Hey, sorry we got off on the wrong foot. Where's your agent friend?
I wish I knew, said Blum. How do I get to the gym? Praying with every step, Blum found the gym and approached the door. She peeked through the window and saw a very tall woman in a tank top and sweatpants lifting a stack of weights on the universal machine. Her muscles were taut and defined, and for a moment, Blum thought she was staring at her boss, minus the hair. She used the keycard to access the door. When it opened, Elle Kane looked over at her. She seemed puzzled, because Blum was clearly not dressed for working out. Blum thought for a moment about how best to handle this. Finally, she decided in the urgency of the moment that the direct approach was best. Mercy Pine? Your twin sister, FBI Special Agent Atlee Pine, has been kidnapped from this hotel, and I need your help to find her. Chapter 47. Kane slowly rose, towering over Blum, who had stepped a bit closer to her. Who in the hell are you? Said Kane. My name is Carol Blum. I work at the FBI. My boss is Atlee Pine, your twin sister. We've been trying to find you for a long time now. I don't have a sister, twin or otherwise. Blum took something from her purse and held it out to Kane, who snatched it and looked down at the photo. That's a picture that Agent Pine had of you and her and your mother when you were living in Andersonville, Georgia. It's a Polaroid, the only one she had of you as sisters. I've been carrying it for her as we look for you. Kane's gaze took in every aspect of the images. Things, murky elements in her memory, started to jostle back and forth like bumper cars. The effect was as jarring as real bumper cars would be. My mother? Yes. And this Atlee. You say she's my sister? That's right. Kane thrust the photo back at Blum. That's a crock of shit. I've never heard of anyone named Atlee. She grabbed her hoodie and stalked off toward the door. But I'm telling you the truth. Kane whipped back around and shouted. Leave me the hell alone, lady. I don't need this shit, especially right now. As Kane turned away from her, Blum frantically thought for a moment and then cried out. You called her Lee when you were kids. On this, Kane froze in the doorway of the gym. She expected every muscle in her body to tense, but instead they relaxed, like a tired swimmer's did after getting safely back to shore.
It's okay, Mama. It's just Lee being Lee. She'll find her way down. She always does. Don't be mad at her, Mama.
Kane now began to tremble. The calm was gone. The bumper cars in her head were now smacking each other with increasing velocity. It actually hurt, not like a headache. It was like someone had lit a match to her soul. But she needed more than a name and an old picture. She turned to Blum. There are lots of girls named Lee. Your mother's name was Julia, Blum said tentatively. Kane shook her head. Means nothing to me. She again turned to leave, while Blum desperately tried to think of something, anything to hold her. Then she remembered their meeting with Desiree, what the woman had said about the book that had driven Mercy into a frenzy. Maybe she would remember that.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo,
Blum blurted out. Kane whipped around. What? The nursery rhyme the kidnapper used to choose between the two of you. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Do you recall that? Kane sagged against the wall, and then abruptly sat down on one of the waitstack benches. Blum said in a sympathetic tone,
I know this is all overwhelming. The truth is, the man who abducted you that night was named Ido Vincenzo, and we know why he took you, and that he gave you to Len and Wanda Atkins, who in turn gave you to Desiree and Joe.
Kane said dully, Wanda told me that. And Desiree is in jail here. I found that out.
Your sister is the one who arrested her. Desiree had imprisoned another young girl named Gail.
We freed her.
Desiree is being charged with that crime among others.
She paused.
And we got her to confess to killing Joe Atkins, Mercy. We have the recording. She confessed to stabbing him to death.
Kane looked at her, blinking back tears and shaking her head slowly.
This is sort of too much to process.
Kane nodded, her features pained. Blum sat down beside her.
Of course it is, Mercy. Or do you prefer L?
Mercy really is my name.
Yes, it is. Mercy Pine.
Then, Mercy is okay. Blum said.
I know you must have a million things running through your head right now, and I don't mean to add to your burden, but there are some things you absolutely need to know.
Like what?
That other FBI agents are here at this hotel. They came to interview Agent Pine about Tim Pine, but they know nothing about your being here too.
Mercy wrinkled her brow.
Tim Pine? You and your sister believed he was your biological father. That was not true. Another man was your father, but Tim raised you with your mother until you were taken when you were 6 years old. He was thought to have killed himself, but now we know that wasn't true. The FBI now knows that the man killed wasn't your father, but Ido Vincenzo.
The guy who took me?
Yes.
Wanda said he was connected to the mob or something, and had a grudge against my mother.
He kidnapped you and then years later tried to kill Tim Pine. Only Tim was able to kill him instead. The body was identified as Tim's by a friend and your mother, and Tim vanished.
Jesus Christ, said Mercy, letting out a chest of air.
Blum patted Mercy's shoulder. I know I've just dumped a lot into your lap, but my goal now is to keep the FBI away from you, because I'm not sure how all that will play out.
But you said Desiree confessed to Joe's murder, Mercy exclaimed. Doesn't that put me in the clear on that?
Desiree did confess, but the FBI doesn't know that yet. The proof of that is on your sister's phone, and it will put you in the clear, as you said. The problem right now is we have her phone, but no way to get into it. So I want to keep you and the Bureau separate until we find Agent Pine.
You said she was kidnapped?
Yes. From this hotel last night by two men. Now either they were working with Desiree, who was also dealing drugs, and are perhaps trying to use Agent Pine as leverage to get Desiree out of prison, or they are tied to you somehow, and took Agent Pine in order to make her tell everything she knows about you. But who would be after me? I don't know. Do you have any enemies? Anyone looking for you?
I don't think I have enemies who would snatch an FBI agent. I mean, I'm not that important. I just have an ordinary life. I don't have any friends or enemies, really.
Then maybe it is Desiree. She might be working with some very dangerous people.
How did you know I was here?
Agent Pine saw you in this gym yesterday, only she didn't know it was you at the time.
She looked at Mercy's head.
She couldn't have known you would shave your hair off. She spoke to Wanda Atkins. Wanda told Agent Pine that she gave you Desiree's phone number when you saw her.
I used that to track Desiree down here.
Yes, that's what we thought. When Wanda told her that and described what she looked like now, Agent Pine immediately realized that it had to be you in the gym. By the time she got there, you were gone. We found out your room number, but you had left by then.
I did leave. But then I decided to come back. I'd spent a lot of money on the hotel room, and I thought I should at least spend the night.
I would have done the same thing, said Blum kindly.
Do you have any idea where they might have taken Lee? Asked Mercy.
No. We only have the statement of a hotel employee that it was two men who abducted her. He gave a description, and the FBI is working on it with the local police. But I'm not sure they have any leads to go on.
And that picture of me on the TV?
Agent Pine had that put up. We found where you were being kept, and saw the last tape that Joe Atkins made. That's where that image came from.
Desiree really did kill him then?
Yes. Joe apparently was going to let you go. Desiree was having none of that. She stabbed him and ran for it. Len and Wanda helped her get away.
Mercy shook her head. So now I know I have a twin sister, and we come close to finding each other, and now she's been taken? Just like I was all those years ago. How messed up is that?
Very, said Blum quietly. Mercy glanced up.
Do I look like her?
You're a couple of inches taller, and she has long dark hair. But in the face and eyes, I can most definitely see it. Absolutely.
Mercy nodded and looked down again.
How do we find her?
I'm not sure. If Desiree is connected to this, she might know who took her.
Yes, but she's in jail.
Then let's go talk to her there. I've been meaning to talk to Desiree for a lot of years now.
She glanced up at Blum.
And we have nothing to lose, right?
Right. Blum attempted a smile, but it never reached her eyes because she obviously did not like this idea at all. Mercy rose and her big hands curled into fists.
Then let's go.
Chapter 48.
Is this your car?
Asked Mercy as they climbed into the Porsche SUV. Blum had taken the keys from Pine's room. Mercy had changed into jeans and another hoodie and checked out of the hotel. She had put her duffel in the back seat.
Good Lord, no, I can't afford this.
Then it's Lee's?
No, she can't afford it either. It belongs to a man named Jack Lineberry. He's very wealthy, and he let us use it.
And what's his connection to all this? Why did he let you borrow his wheels?
Blum put the key in the ignition and started the engine.
I suppose you have to know this, and now is as good a time as any.
Know what?
Jack Lineberry is your biological father.
Mercy took this calmly. She nodded and glanced out the window.
So our mom was quite the guy magnet.
I don't think it was like that at all. He was her handler when she was working undercover to bring down some mafia families.
They had feelings for each other, or something like that, and your mother became pregnant with you and your sister.
So how did she end up with this Tim guy?
They fell in love. Jack is quite a bit older than your mother, and their relationship might have had more to do with the work they were doing, at least for your mother. I have to say that Jack Lineberry was very much in love with your mother,
and probably still is. And where is our mother? With Tim, presumably. And Lee, where is she in all this? When your sister was in college, your mother left her without any real explanation. She doesn't know where your mother is. Blum studied her closely. You're taking all this quite calmly. Well, it's no more earth-shattering than anything else you've already told me in the last 10 minutes. This blunt statement made Blum smile. You are more like your sister than you know. Am I? Mercy said dubiously. My life has been very different from hers, apparently. I know some of what you went through with Desiree. I dreamed of killing her 1,000 times. I'm sure you have. I came here to kill her. Yes, Agent Pine assumed that. Agent Pine, huh? FBI and everything. Didn't know they had many gals doing that. She's an excellent agent, one of the very best. Blum pulled out of the parking lot and headed toward the street. Good for her, said Mercy, but the voiced compliment rang hollow. And you've been looking for me for a while now? Yes, it's been quite the journey, with a lot of twists and turns. Yeah, I bet. Blum glanced at her. What have you been doing all this time, Mercy? Just surviving, like everybody else. It will be difficult for you to see Desiree, won't it? It may be more difficult for her than me. Blum said sharply. You didn't escape from that awful woman just so she could put you back in prison, did you? I feel like I have every right to kill her. But if you do, she wins. And I know you're smart enough to know that. But if you can't promise me you won't attack her, then we're not going to see Desiree. She may be the only lead to find your boss. And your sister. So unless you're prepared to hold back your natural anger, we're not going to be able to find Agent Pine, which means she'll probably die. I should have more feelings for her, said Mercy, perhaps with a degree of honesty that startled even her. But it's been a long time, and a lot of shit happened in between, and she got to stay home. I lost the rhyme. I got pitched into the nightmare. Blum pursed her lips. Ito Vincenzo, the man who kidnapped you, also cracked your sister's skull that night. She lay there all night with her brain bleeding. It was only a miracle that she lived after a long time in the hospital. That night destroyed your family. Your sister later thought Tim killed himself, but your mother lied about that. Then she left to join Tim, as I said, leaving your sister all alone. It seems that Vincenzo apparently thought he was taking you to a good situation, where you would be taken care of. He knew nothing about Desiree. So I think, at least in his mind, that you were the winner of the rhyme, and your sister was the loser. Blum looked over at Mercy to find her glowering at her. I wasn't a winner in any way, shape, or form. Blum said hastily. Of course you weren't. I'm only saying that Vincenzo meant to kill your sister, not you. Mercy settled back in her seat and glanced out the window. Blum said, And, unlike you, Agent Pine has very firm memories of you. She's lived with that loss for the last 30 years. Mercy said in a far calmer tone, Desiree managed to beat those memories out of me. I remember snatches here and there. The name Lee. The fact that somebody else was there, you know. Yes, I can understand that. But it's not the same as having memories. It's just shit in your head you can't make sense of. Like, somebody gave you a book to read, but first smeared all the words so badly that you can only make a couple out. It's a hard thing to live with, knowing it's there somewhere but never being able to find it. She looked over at Blum. Sorry if how I talk doesn't measure up. You said your boss went to college and everything. I may sound dumb, but I'm mostly not. I read a lot. Books got me through a bunch of shit. You sound just fine to me. And I think, given what happened to you, it's a miracle you're even alive. I don't give up. I never have.
You hurt me, I just try harder. That is exactly who your sister is.
Mercy nodded, but didn't comment.
And Desiree? Asked Blum nervously.
Mercy didn't answer right away.
I won't lay a hand on her.
And why's that?
Because you're right. I don't want to lose, especially to that bitch.
A moment of quiet passed, and then she added,
and maybe I'd like a shot at meeting my sister, alive.
Chapter 49. Mercy followed Blum, who was trailing Deputy Tate Callum down the hall toward the cell holding Desiree Atkins. And she was sweating, for two reasons. First, she was in a jail surrounded by cops. That was bad enough. She'd been in jail on the other side of the bars, and this was bringing back all those memories. Second, she was about to see the woman who had tortured and then very nearly killed her a long time ago. She knew which was worse. The flesh-and-blood woman easily won over the steel bars. Callum glanced at Blum.
And where is Agent Pine today?
Tied up. She just wanted me to follow up on a few questions. Agent Kane is here assisting us.
They had come up with that story on the way over. Callum eyed Mercy.
So, you work undercover, Agent Kane?
Mercy smiled, ran a hand over her scalp, and touched her stained sweatshirt.
What was your first clue, other than the fact that I don't have my badge with me?
He laughed.
Right. Boy, they grow the ladies tall at the Bureau, don't they?
They reached the cell door, and Callum opened it and ushered them through.
Just let the jailer know when you're done.
He closed the door behind them and headed back down the hall. Desiree turned and saw Mercy.
Holy shit!
Mercy said nothing. She just stared down at the woman. Desiree backed up against the wall.
Don't you dare come near me!
She glared at Blum.
What the hell do you think you're doing bringing this psycho here?
I thought it was high time you two were finally reunited.
Blum failed to hide a smile. Mercy looked around and then sat down on the lower bunk.
Nice clean digs, Desiree. You should be able to make do in a place like this for what? The rest of your shitty life?
They've got nothing on me. You just wait until I get myself a lawyer.
Heard you pulled the same crap with another girl like you did with me. Sounds like she got away from you a lot faster than I did.
You must be losing your touch.
Shut up.
It's a wonder I was ever scared of you. I mean, you look like a plump little mouse ready to be eaten, and I can eat a lot.
I scared you well enough back then.
Not that hard to do with a 6-year-old. A lot harder to do with a 16-year-old. And damn impossible to do right now.
Desiree shook her head.
You're full of it. You had no idea who you were dealing with.
The harder you tried to hurt me, the farther inside my head I went. Then your little fantasy fell apart and you left me alone. So guess who won the head game?
You think I care about any of this?
Mercy smiled broadly.
I'll testify at your trial. I can be exhibits A to Z on your being a sadistic bitch.
She looked over at Blum.
And now this lady wants to ask you some questions.
Go to hell.
That's not very nice, said Mercy.
Blum interjected.
If you help us, Desiree, maybe we can help you.
How?
The police know you were running a drug operation. They want to know who you were working with. If you can tell them that, they can work a deal on your sentencing.
Desiree's face lighted up for a moment and then went hard again.
Well, they better make it a damn good deal or they get squat from me.
What can you tell us?
Nothing, until I get a deal in writing.
She smiled maliciously.
But the guys I work with, they are some bad hombres.
Do you think they know you've been arrested?
They're not stupid, okay?
But you haven't spoken with them?
She looked at Blum curiously.
Why do you want to know? And where's that other FBI bitch? Why isn't she with you?
Plum looked at Mercy and then returned her gaze to Desiree.
I'll see what I can come up with, but if I do come back with an offer, can you help us?
Help you do what exactly?
I'll let you know once we have a deal in place.
Plum walked over to the door.
Officer,
she called out between the bars. As the man headed toward them, Desiree said to Mercy,
You think you're all high and mighty now?
Mercy didn't even look at her.
Compared to you, I am.
You're just big and ugly. An animal. That's all you'll ever be.
And loving every minute of it.
They left her there and walked back down the hall to meet up with Callum. They passed an older man with graying hair, thick jowls, and a pretentious expression heading the other way. He was dressed in a sleek, dark blue suit with a red tie and a pocket square. He had a black leather briefcase in one hand. He glanced at Plum and Mercy and came away obviously unimpressed. The jailer escorting him said,
It's right down this way, Mr. Marbury.
As they were out of earshot, Mercy said,
I don't trust people in suits who carry briefcases.
Well, you just knocked out the entire legal profession.
I know.
Plum said,
I'm not sure she'll be able to help us. I think she was lying about the bad hombres. That's why I didn't mention what had happened to Agent Pine. There would have been no point.
But if the guys working with her didn't snatch Lee, who did?
Plum said glumly,
I don't know. And we're running out of time. I can just feel it.
Back with Callum, Plum talked to him about a possible deal in exchange for information on Pine's whereabouts.
I'm certainly sorry to hear about Agent Pine,
said Callum.
But I don't think we can do any deals, at least not right now.
Why?
Because the lady is represented by counsel now. He'll have to come up to speed, and then we'll have to have the prosecutors meet with him. If we don't go by the book, we can jeopardize our entire case.
Who's her lawyer? A local guy?
Nope. Guy named Marbury. Stephen Marbury. He's in from New York. You probably passed him in the hall. Older guy, gray hair, dressed in a suit that probably costs more than my truck.
Mercy said, That's the jerk we passed in the hall. He's her lawyer?
That's right. Just flew into town, he said.
Plum thanked Callum for his help, told him not to mention them to the lawyer, and then she led Mercy outside. They climbed into the Porsche and eyed the black Escalade that was idling out front of the detention center, with the driver on his phone. Mercy said,
Probably Marbury's ride. He looked like a guy who gets driven around. So maybe we wait around and see where that ride takes him.
Maybe to my sister, said Mercy.
Maybe, said Plum in a distracted tone.
What's the matter?
Asked Mercy, glancing at her.
Something Desiree said, Plum suddenly exclaimed. Stay here. I'll be right back.
She hurried back into the facility. About 2 minutes later, she came out and got back into the Porsche.
So what's going on? Asked Mercy.
I just talked to Callum. He said Desiree has made no phone calls since she's been here. And you recall she told us she was going to get a lawyer?
Mercy nodded slowly, thinking this through.
So if she made no calls and said she was going to get a lawyer, she obviously had no idea this Marbury dude was even coming today.
So if Desiree didn't send for this high-powered lawyer from New York, who did?
Chapter 50. Peter Buckley listened on his phone for a few minutes. He liked to listen. That was the way one learned things. When you talked, you gave away things. He said,
Fine, but I want to meet face to face, and you can give me a fuller briefing. I'll text you the address. I've arranged a place for the very short term.
He put his phone back in his pocket and returned to the room where Pine was seated in the chair. They had tied her to it this time, so if any more beatings happened, she wouldn't fall off it. Britt Spector stood off to one side watching, a nervous expression on her features.
Agent Pine,
said Buckley.
The woman you arrested is Dolores Venuti. She is accused, among other things, of kidnapping a child and holding her prisoner.
Pine said. I know that.
Why do I think Dolores Venuti and Desiree Atkins are one and the same?
Think what you want, replied Pine. It's a free country.
You won't confirm it?
No.
I've also heard that Dolores will try to make bail.
That'll never happen. She's a flight risk. Pine caught herself a beat too late. Buckley allowed himself a brief smile.
Right. She's a flight risk because you told them about what happened in Georgia. Good. Thank you for confirming my theory that Dolores and Desiree are one and the same. As for the bail, we will have to see. Court decisions are sometimes unpredictable.
Not this time.
But if she does make bail, I will pay her to tell me what she knows.
Desiree hasn't seen the woman in nearly 20 years. What could she possibly tell you?
One never knows until one asks.
And if you talk to her, then you'll just drop me back at the hotel all safe and sound, said Pine in a blistering tone. Buckley eyed Spectre before answering.
I will give you one more chance to tell me all you know about El Kane. Then, your death is not inevitable. You have my word.
Your word? Don't think so. I pass.
Are you sure?
What I'm sure of is that I was dead the moment I let your goons get the drop on me. But if you're going to kill me anyway, you have no reason not to tell me why you want Kane so badly.
I told you, she killed someone.
But you didn't tell me who.
That is no concern of yours.
Come on. I give you my word. I won't tell anyone. Not that I'll be able to. Buckley hesitated, his mind working rapidly, perhaps too rapidly.
My brother.
Spectre shot him a disapproving look, but said nothing. And did he deserve it?
Without a doubt, he did.
So what's your beef with her, then?
He was my family. That's enough reason for me.
I can see how you might think that, but thinking like that tends to get you killed.
I like my odds better than yours right now.
So when will you know if Desiree makes bail? She said.
Soon.
Well, I've got lots of time then. Buckley eyed her closely.
You are brave. I like that in a person.
Thanks. Now go fuck yourself. Spectre smiled at this comment, but turned away so Buckley wouldn't see.
Are you sure you don't want to reconsider? It is possible that you know a lot more about the matter than Desiree does. I'm a man who prefers as much information as possible.
Repeat in your head what I just said to you. A visibly frustrated Buckley turned and left, beckoning Spectre to join him. Spectre eyed Pine for a long moment. Judging by her expression, a number of troubling thoughts were going through her mind. Then she turned and followed Buckley out. Chapter 51. Pine listened as additional sets of footsteps followed those of the two people who had already left. Then another one after that. The light was turned off, driving her even deeper into darkness. The door was closed and locked, and then a few seconds later, all became quiet as the sound of the footfalls vanished. She waited a bit longer, and then leaned so far forward in the chair that the back legs came off the floor. Her knees edged down to touch the concrete, so there was barely any noise. They had tied her ankles individually to the chair legs, but had not run the rope through the crossbeam. That was a big mistake. She slowly turned to the side and simply straightened her own legs to free them. Then she was able to stand with the chair still attached to her. The blindfold had slipped enough with her maneuvers that part of it was close to her mouth. She bit down on the fabric and jerked her head to the left and right. The cloth slipped enough to where she could see. She looked at the wall, turned and backed toward it until the chair bumped into it. She bent forward so the lower half of the chair and the back legs were right against the wall. Then she slowly applied weight and thus pressure until she could feel the wood begin to give. She kept going, slowly. The last thing she needed was some explosion of sound to bring her captors running. The left leg separated first, and then the right. Then the bottom half of the chair came apart from the top,
The next minute, the whole thing was splitting apart at various spots. She got her hands free of the restraints and quietly pulled the chair off her. She ripped away the blindfold and looked around at the darkened space. No windows. Solid walls. One door in and out. Slab floor. She slipped over to the door and put her ear against it. She could hear nothing. If someone had been on the other side, they would have already come bursting in here. She tried the door, but it was locked. She had no phone, no lockpick kit, no guns. She was alone, with no way to get help. Instead of feeling hopeless, she saw it as a challenge, an obstacle to be overcome. And it wasn't like she had anything else to do while they were waiting to kill her. Pine looked around the space and saw some boxes stacked by the wall. In one was an emergency radio, with a built-in light and other features. She popped the battery compartment and snagged the old batteries in there. Some had their ends ruptured where the chemicals had seeped through. She laid out the batteries on their sides in front of the door, pocketed one of them, and then stood on the chair Buckley had used and unscrewed the light bulb. Then she climbed down and went to stand by the door. Pine stood there for more than an hour, until she heard footsteps. Fortunately, only one set. She moved back against the wall. The door was unlocked, and then it opened. She saw in the darkness a hand move to the light switch as the person entered the room. No light came on, obviously. Then the feet reached the batteries underfoot, and the person fell heavily. That was the only opportunity Pine needed. She could see his outline on the floor from the scant illumination coming from the next room. She smashed her foot right into his diaphragm to keep him from crying out. Her next shot was an elbow strike to the head, which bounced his cranium off the concrete with the same level of whiplash a rear-end car accident might inflict. The impact knocked him cold. She searched him and pulled out his pistol. Fortunately, in his other pocket was her shield. She used the rope from the chair to secure his hands and feet, and then she slid him over to a corner of the room. Pine looked closely at his face. This was one of the men who had kidnapped her from the hotel. She doubted this was the guy who had been talking to her. That man was clearly the boss, and head honchos seldom did the dirty work. She clocked him one more time in the face, just for the hell of it. She moved out into the next room after shutting the door behind her and locking it. Then she quietly made her way across the room and up the stairs and reached the top landing. The door was partially open. She did a turkey peek that revealed nothing. She did a second look and saw a man sitting at a table looking at his phone with his earbuds in. He was the other guy who had snatched her. She stuck her head out and surveyed the rest of the room. Empty. But that was not good enough. There was no room for error here. She only had one shot to do this right. She took out the battery with her left hand and hurled it at the window behind the guy. As soon as it struck the glass, the man jumped up from the table, dropping his phone on the floor and cried out,
"What the hell?"
Pine waited 3 seconds to see if the tossed battery drew anyone else out into the open. When it was clear the man was alone, she stepped through the doorway and pointed the gun at him. "On your knees, hands behind your head, then lie down face first, legs spread. Do it now, or I will shoot you." The man saw the gun, fell to the floor and put his hands behind his head. Pine quickly moved forward and used the butt of the gun to inflict 2 hard taps on his skull, knocking him out. He got the same trussed-up treatment as his partner downstairs, with a cord of thick twine she found in a cabinet. She snagged his phone and called 911, told the dispatcher who she was and what had happened, and asked her to notify Tate Callum of her circumstances. "Do you know where you are?" the dispatcher asked. "Give me a sec." She ran outside and looked around at the thick woods surrounding the house in which she'd been held captive. "In the middle of nowhere. Seems to be a lot of that around here." "Okay, we can trace you by your phone. Just leave it on." She looked down at the phone. "The battery is really low. It might die on me, and I'm not hanging around here because some other people might show up. I'm going to walk out to the main road. That might give me a better idea where I am. Hold on." Pine ran down the long, twisty drive, finally reached the main street and found a mailbox with a number address on it, and then a street sign farther down. She gave this information to the dispatcher. The dispatcher said,
I'll have officers there as fast as possible. Be careful, Agent Pine.
Next, Pine was about to call Blum when...
Shit!
She looked down at the screen as the iPhone's juice ran out and it went dark. The last thing she wanted to do was go back to the house and search for a phone charger. A moment later, an ancient, rattling Ford pickup truck with a license plate designating it as an antique appeared around a curve and headed her way. Pine stood in the middle of the street with her shield held up high. When the driver slowed and stopped, Pine rushed forward. Behind the wheel was a white-haired woman in her 80s, wearing faded bib overalls, a straw hat, and a wry smile.
I'm an FBI agent, Pine said, showing her the shield.
The woman squinted at it and then pulled up her glasses, which dangled on a chain to see it better.
My, my. That's very impressive, young lady.
I need you to drive me to a hotel in downtown Asheville. She told the woman the address, then added, It's an emergency.
Sure, honey, I know where that is. Get in.
Pine jumped into the passenger seat, and the woman said,
Do I get to break the speed limit since it's an emergency?
Pine said, Do whatever you need to do to get me there as fast as possible. Any cops stop us, I'll deal with it.
Do you have a cell phone I can use?
The woman shook her head.
Had one of them flip phones once, but I never got the hang of it. Every time that thing rang in my pocket, nearly scared me to death.
Great, said Pine under her breath.
Now let's get going,
the old woman said as she sat up straighter, took off her glasses, and rammed down the gas pedal. The truck leapt forward, but then settled into a sedate 40 miles per hour pace. The woman looked over at her and smiled.
This truck belonged to my father. Got it wound all the way up, Missy. All 140 horsepower. Can you feel it? We'll be there lickety-split. This is so exciting.
Yes, ma'am,
was all Pine could manage. Chapter 52.
There he is, said Blum.
Stephen Marbury had just walked out of the detention facility. He had a pleased expression on his face as he climbed into the back of the Escalade. As soon as the door closed, the vehicle drove off. Blum put the Porsche in gear and followed at a discreet distance. Mercy said, You really think this is connected to Lee's disappearance?
I would be shocked if it weren't, but I've been to Desiree's house. If she was working with a drug ring that has this kind of legal muscle, I would have thought she'd be more affluent.
She might be socking it away and living light to avoid suspicion,
opined Mercy. Blum glanced at her.
You'd make a good detective.
I've lived life and learned my lessons, replied Mercy tersely.
The Escalade turned onto the main road and sped up. Both vehicles traveled several blocks in moderate traffic before stopping at a red light.
Do you remember anything of your life before you went to the Atkinses? Asked Blum.
Except what you've already told me.
I sort of remember my mother. She was tall, too. I remember Lee being up in a tree. And I went back to the Atkinses place in Crawfordville, to my little prison. Found my doll, Sally, and took it. She's in my duffel.
It must have been painful reliving all that.
It was at first. And then I remembered that I survived all that.
The light changed, and they started up again.
I wonder where he's going, said Mercy.
Hopefully to a place that will lead us to Agent Pine.
Do you like working with her?
It's the best job I've ever had.
Lee sounds perfect, Mercy said with a bit of snark.
Blum glanced at Mercy.
If that was your impression from what I said, then I said it wrong. She grew up largely alone. Even when her mother was there, she told me that she really wasn't. After what happened, it was like your mother both smothered your sister as far as never letting her out of sight, but then cut her off emotionally.
Mercy looked over at Blum, her expression now more nuanced.
That must have been tough. A double whammy, because I kind of remember Lee liked to do stuff Mom didn't want her to do. But then Mom was really proud of her for doing it.
That seemed to mean a lot to Lee, like they were real tight.
I'm a mother. I know how important maternal nurturing is. Nothing comes close to what you endured. But Agent Pine has suffered the effects of that motherly absence, too.
Mercy nodded and looked thoughtfully out the window. And my dad is this Jack Lineberry character? How exactly did that shake out? He worked at a government agency. I'm not sure which one. As I said, he was your mother's handler. They developed feelings for each other and acted on those feelings. I'm sure it was a very difficult time for both of them. Jack was actually engaged to someone else, but then he fell in love with your mother. And then they got together, and your mother became pregnant with you and your sister. Mercy smiled. You have a nice, polite way with words, Carol. You mean they had sex and out popped twins. That's one way to describe it, said Blum primly. She turned left to follow the Escalade. And where is this Lineberry guy now? He's at his estate in Georgia. Estate, huh? Must be nice. He's leaving everything to you and Agent Pine, by the way. All his wealth. You will be a very rich woman when the time comes. Blum glanced at Mercy to see her reaction to this. It wasn't what she expected. Or maybe it was. Mercy was frowning. I get by just fine. I don't need big bucks from a guy who screwed my mom. Well, it will come to you eventually, and you can do with it what you want. You're assuming I outlive the guy. Nothing is guaranteed, she added bluntly. No argument there. 5 minutes later, Blum said, It looks like we have arrived. The Escalade had slowed and turned into a long drive that led up to a substantial home on about 5 acres. Well, whoever we're dealing with has some bucks of his own, noted Mercy. Blum slowed the Porsche and pulled past the driveway the Escalade had turned into. Then she drove on and turned into the parking lot of a church that was down the street a bit. There were other cars in the parking lot, and she edged in between two of them so as not to stand out. She stared across the street at the house. They might have Agent Pine in there. Maybe so. Now what do? We could call the police, but we really have no grounds to do so. And if they come and find nothing in there, the people will know we're on to them. I can go take a look, offered Mercy. No, it's too dangerous. If they are in there, they could capture or kill you. Then what? We just wait out here while they might be in there hurting Lee? Blum looked torn. But you have no experience doing this sort of thing. Let me tell you something. I've kicked the shit out of more tough guys than any gal you'll ever meet, including your boss. There's a lot to worry about with this, but me not being able to handle myself ain't one of them. But, Mercy started to open the door. I'll be careful. I'll just go and take a peek, okay? Blum's defenses crumbled away. Are you sure? As sure as my name is Mercy Pine. She leaned into the back seat, zipped open her duffel, and took out her Glock in the belt clip. When Blum saw it, she said, Do you have a permit for that? Where I got it, you don't need a permit or a background check. And North Carolina is an open carry without a permit state. I checked that before I came here. Why did you do that? Mercy put the clip holster on her waistband and covered it with her sweatshirt. I don't like to get hassled by the cops if I can avoid it. What's your phone number? I'll text or call you if something pops. Blum gave her the number, and Mercy put it in her contacts list. Then Blum opened the glove box, plucked out a pair of small binoculars, and handed them to Mercy. Thanks. I feel like a real spy now. Blum said, Please, please be careful. I don't want to lose both sisters. Mercy got out, looked both ways down the road, then hustled across the street. She made a wide berth around the Target property and promptly disappeared from sight. Blum sat back in her seat, ran a shaky hand over her forehead, and started to pray. Chapter 53. A preoccupied Buckley sat in a chair in the dining room of the house, where the large furnishings still looked small in relation to the enormous space. Spectre moodily leaned against the wall, while Stephen Marbury paced restlessly in front of them. The house was closed for the season. Its owners were at their other home in Colorado, which was probably even more splendid than this one.